Okay, today is January 4th, 2015, and we're here in Yerushalayim where the rain is endless, the snow is coming, and we evidently davened with tremendous kavana, tefillat hageshem. Every year we hear people crying, and the rabbanim, and the should we say the special tefillin shma koleinu, and this year, Baruch Hashem, no one is crying, and no one is saying special tefillah. Baruch Hashem. Okay, I just want to mention in relation to Erev, my comrade Rabbi Moshe Erlbaum in Kew Gardens Hills writes to me when I became engaged to my wife. I went with her to meet the Rav, her Rav, Rabbi Peretz Steinberg. He's Rav of the Young Israel of what's it called, the Valley, Queens Valley. Being a Talmud of Rabbi Mordechai Tendler, I questioned the Erev situation and became a bit upset and very strongly told me that this is the only Erev in the New York area with the approval of Rav Moshe, whom Rabbi Steinberg took around and showed him the boundaries. I never questioned him again and since then became very close to him. And he sent me a map. As you can see in the map, it is surrounded on three sides by highways and real fences along the highway, although there are wires as well above them, and some areas which require at Sirat HaPesach, such as where Main Street and Jewel Avenue meet the highways. On the Hillscrest side, there at Sirat HaPesach, but also Omeid Meruba with the walls of the house along 164th Street. So Baruch Hashem, you see that everything we're talking about is here, Halacha L'maisa. And evidently with Queens, Rav Moshe never felt there was a problem of 600,000 people in the streets. He was able to give Haskama in a very simple fashion. Regarding London, we got involved last week with the problem that comes up in London, which interestingly is not a mainstream problem in the United States. And that remains a question. Why? And we'll see that... Posek after Posek was no tila hakel. But in London, we came up with the highway. Well, and I have here, now I found the paper I was looking for last week from my Talmud Alan Engel, who comes from a very prominent rabbinic family, if you recognize the last name, in London, regarding North Circular Road London. While it is a major road serving North London, the number of vehicles using it daily is no greater than 50,000. So that means that looking at the map and looking at the maps that Yomo prepared for us, there's no question that the North Circular Road does not look as big and as menacing as Queens Boulevard, and I'll add on, as in addition to Queens Boulevard, what's the big one in Ocean Parkway in Brooklyn. Now, but then you come to Hampstead Heath, which is a tremendous tract of open wasteland, at one time totally wasteland, adjacent to Golders Green. And within that tract, you not only have a tremendous parking lot for the Brentcross shopping area, but you have a large golf establishment. And all of you know, when it comes to golf, you need endless land with various obstacles, people are golfing, and with it all, there was samach lahakel, that since it's for human enjoyment, human use, it is considered mukaf l'dirar, mukaf for the human being for us to enjoy, and therefore it doesn't interfere with the Erev. As far as kapaf goes, as I told you, I pronounce it kapaf, I find it hard to change. That's what I heard when I was a kid in yeshiva. Nevertheless, Jastrow has kapif, and I think that in Steinsaltz I saw kapaf. But no matter what we're talking about the same thing, an unused area. Then we ended off the share last week, and we'll pick up right where we ended off, Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss, those of you who know him, he's been in Gris a number of times. Yosef Chaim Kasola, Rabbi Kasola, who was a Talmud here for a number of years. Some of you may know him. Anyone know him? He's in Boca today. So he used to go to Rabbi Weiss's Sheyurim, and when he had a Brit of a grandson, he brought Rabbi Shweiss here to be the Sandek, and there's a picture in my office where I'm saving Rabbi Shweiss's sanity. I told you the story, I trust, that came to naming the baby, and they say Yosef, the baby's name is Chaim Yosef ben Yosef Chaim. And I could see Rav Asher Weiss was very disturbed. What's going on here? You follow me, Zev? And I said to him, it's Sfadim, Eidot HaMizrach. The minute I said Eidot HaMizrach, Isaac, he nachti et baito. And Baruch Hashem, there's a kibbutz Goliath here, and the Sfadim in certain areas are a lot smarter than the Ashkenazim. We name our kids after our great-grandparents, after our grandparents, long after they're gone. Halavai, we should be able to name our children in Arana, b'chayenu, to have Hana, but all right, these are Eidot HaMizrach, these are Ashkenazim, and Zevezeh, Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. Okay, now, Asher Weiss has, and I'm quoting to you, I gave you the source last week, I'm quoting to you from the what I give Yitzchak. I have three from the last few weeks for him. So these are the shurim that he gives, and they print it out. And I'm quoting for Rav Asher Weiss. This was published in 2013. It's the 11th year of these publications. It's the 19th booklet. I imagine some of this is already published in his tshuva. In what's come out now from Asher Weiss, what are the tshuvot called? Anyone can help me? Minchat Asher, right? Minchat Asher. Shel tshuvot Minchat Asher. So he raises this problem with the whole comment. And here he tells an amazing story, because you got to realize if we're going to be makpid that within the area of any city, you're going to have parks, you're going to have botanical gardens, you're going to have fields that are planted. By the way, I kept on talking about the orchard here. Oranges, grapefruits, a Talmud from before you were born, Dr. Alan Blau, sent me an email, Rebbe, I don't want to be petty, but it was not grapefruits and oranges, he says it was apples. And he says he has a picture of the apple orchard. I honestly don't remember, maybe he's right, but he does agree that this entire area was one endless, tremendous orchard. And all of it disappeared, all of it was knocked down. This is the most valuable real estate in Yerushalayim, what's being built, Givat Mordechai towards Nayot. One day, I hope I'll live to see it, the whole area will be built up. But I accept the correction, whether it's apples or oranges or... But one thing we agree, it wasn't Zrayim, which you can't walk on because you killed the plants. So this is a tremendous machloket. And he tells a very cute story here that he said it's well known that this is a machloket, some asa, some mata, zem mekil, zem machmir, zel se, zem matir, and... Shahaderet tikein erib Yerushalayim, ir hakodesh v'sadot hakotzim nichalu be'erib v'samach al dat hametkilim uliachap etirato pasal hagon Reb Shmuel Salanta the erib v'otziat hashtachim haptukim in erib al menat latzeit mitei safek. And I'll fill you in with a little biographical material. Who was the Aderet? Eliyahu David Ta'omin Rabinovich. That was Rav Kook's father-in-law. The Aderet was Rav of Panovich. And in his old age, he came in Aliyah. I have to tell you, he was a very fascinating individual. He left a memoir. The Rabbanim suffered plenty from the Balabatim. Don't think it's only Aaron Rothkopf back in 1961 in Lower Merion Synagogue under attack. The Rabbanim in Europe suffered plenty. And he left a memoir, very strong memoir, with very interesting opinions. Then he came in Aliyah. He had money. He left the rabbinate. He had a final settlement. He did great things in Jerusalem. Now, Yerushalayim, and by the way, the Aderets coming in Aliyah absolutely influenced Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kook. At the farewell party for the Aderet in Panovich, when Rav Kook got up to speak, and there's you know, memoir literature on this, whenever he mentioned that my father-in-law is going to Yerushalayim HaKodesh, Rav Kook broke into tears. So you can understand what I'm saying. The Aderet built an Erev, and he was Mekil. He was Samach HaMdekula, that we can include these open areas. It's there to serve the human being. I'll even add a modern thought, because nowadays there's a fellow, Shmuel Yankelevich, right? He talks about ecology, being good to the earth. Moshe Schwartz told me he just wrote a letter to the Ribbono Shel Olam, just published a letter, why we need Karbonot. He's asking the Ribbono Shel Olam to teach him why we need Karbonot. I want to tell you that was the first reform. The reform got rid of the Karbonot. Who can talk about Karbonot in modern times? And they got rid of it immediately. Then the conservative came along, Nu Yitzchak, remember their Nusach? Shehikrivu lefanecha, past tense. And I have to tell you, I was asked this very question on the Israeli radio, again, before you were born, in a dialogue with a reform rabbi. A reform rabbi who had learned in Lakewood and in Mir and Lakewood. I never met a person with such hatred for Yiddishkeit. And among his questions, he told me, you can believe in sacrifice, a modern individual, you have a doctorate, you're an academician, you can believe in sacrifice. So I quoted the Ramban to him, that, you know, we're not experienced. Look at the Hakdamat to Ramban, the Sefer Yikra. When we'll experience it, we'll understand a lot better. But I said to him, but I want to tell you something. I believe if we had sacrifice, people would be much more careful drivers and we wouldn't have so many deaths on the road. You have no idea how that shook up the listening audience. I was walking along the street, people were running after me to kiss my hand like a Hasidic Rebbe. They loved that answer. And sacrifice. Maybe you'll drive a little bit more carefully. Moshe, I just related to Yankelevich. You pick it up. And anyway, so if you take the... I haven't said a word yet. By the way, with Karbonot, I want to tell you, Yankelevich is not intellectually honest. Of course, he quotes the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim. What about the Rambam in Mishneh Torah? Those of you that I dealt with this many years ago. The Rav dealt with it many, many times over. So if you're going to quote the Rambam, you have to quote both. Then you raise a question, does the Rambam contradict himself or not? And that, I'll give you an answer. It's not for now. Yeah, I don't know. I want to speak on top of it. Yeah.
His parish in the Siddur on the Ritzay makes the point that there's a question. Are we praying that Hashem should bring Karbonos in the future, or should he accept the Karbonos that we are offering now?
Now.
Because to be a religious Jew means to submit the will of God.
Sacrifice.
Which means I'm sacrificing my Ratzon to be the Ratzon of Hashem, and I'm asking Hashem to accept that.
So what Yitzchak said is that the Rav talking about Ritzay and Tefillah, the Rav said it can mean either the sacrifices of old, and we hope the sacrifices of new, or the future, exactly. Or does it mean the sacrifices I bring today as a religious Jew? What was this, Saturday night in Boston?
No, this is written in the Koran edition of the Siddur.
Yeah, but where did they get it from? Which lecture?
Oh, that I don't
know. So this is very fitting for Saturday night in Boston. Because you're dealing there with the American Jew who it's really sacrificed, Kashrut, Shabbat, etc. Anyway, the Aderet was lenient. And when he died, and this is also an interesting story, Rav Shmuel Salant was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. Rav Shmuel Salant, they kept on trying to, he was 80, 90. He died a very old age, I think close to 100. He was blind, so they always kept on trying to bring him an assistant. Whichever assistant they brought him didn't outlive him. Who was the first assistant? Who helped me out? Where do I live? What street? Reb Chaim Berlin was his first assistant. They brought Reb Chaim Berlin, who was Moscow, they brought him to Yerushalayim, and he predeceased Reb Shmuel Salant. Then they brought the Aderet, and he predeceased of Shmuel Salant. So Rav Asher Weiss writes, When the Aderet died, Reb Shmuel Solant went and redid the Eruv, and all the areas that he was Choshesh had a halachic status of a kapath, he fenced around like Rabbi Riskin did in Ephrat, so that you have no machlokes anymore. He was machmir. You follow me, Noah? He was machmir, Adam, and this is what he did. So you see, two chief rabbis of Jerusalem are machloket right there. But at least I give Rav Shmuel Solan credit that he didn't make the machloket b'chayav. It was only after he died, he went and redid the Erev. And as someone that's lived here, it's my 46th year here, Kanayin Hara, if you would have seen the machloket that I have seen among Rabbanim, forget about politicians, but among Rabbanim, so you got to give credit, this was only after he died. So then he goes in to the two tremendous questions that he was asked, that he says are modern questions. One we referred to last week, and one I'll clue you in a second. The first question is, of course, the Air Force Base. And Ein Hachinami, I've been on every type of base in the Army. You come and live in Israel, and I've seen the world. I've been to Lebanon, I've been to Africa. My clothes, my food, my weapons, all provided by the IDF. When I mean Africa, I'm talking about Sinai. I'm talking about when we had the entire Sinai Peninsula. That technically is part of Africa, I was told. So I've been to all these places. And an Air Force base in particular is tremendous. It has to be the size of JFK. It has to be the size of Lud, of Ben-Gurion. It's a tremendous, you have to have runways. You have to have runways to accommodate jets, runways to accommodate jets that carry troops that are infinitely bigger troop carriers than any jet fighter. And you have to have many runways because, God forbid, in a time of war, you can have 3, 4, 5, 6, 12, 24 planes taking off at once. Now, in addition, you have all the crews, what I told you last week, the technical crews. You don't realize what goes into keeping one plane afloat. And in order to keep a plane afloat, you need a massive crew. Everyone has to live on base. The pilots have to be ready within minutes. Let's say there's an alert, an army vehicle will transport them to the plane. I saw this in Denver, Colorado, in the big Air Force base outside Denver. They were responsible for the whole West Coast. And it was the same setup. It's not that Israel invented this. This is the protocol, the way an Air Force base has to work. And the tremendous question, this is open area. People don't even walk there. Planes are going back and forth. How can you build an Erev? Isn't this a kapaf? And remember, the higher base is surrounded by a fence. When you talk about an army installation, building an Erev is very simple because you have a fence around the entire base. There may be a few little areas that you have to put up a tzirat petach, but even that I doubt, because what opens with doors, it's security, it's sealed in. That's one question he got. Another question, and this concerns, of course, Yehuda Vishomron, which is so much in the news. I suffer when I hear the news, some Jews, the hatred, the enmity for Eretz Yisrael. Rav Kook predicted it. If you don't have religion, he wrote a letter, it appears, and he wrote Rav Kook, he wrote a letter about 105 years ago. He says, ultimately, if Zionism is on the map without religion, their very grandchildren will have enmity towards the land. And if you hear some of these peaceniks, the way they speak, it's beyond comprehension. But okay, that's the reality. I don't think they're the majority, thank God, but it hurts to hear the way they speak. So Yehuda Vishomron, you have settlements. You have settlements. We could not sit here peacefully if we didn't have these settlements surrounding Jerusalem. Wherever you have settlement, it becomes a barrier. Troops cannot be the same barrier that humans are, that a settlement, that houses, homes, roads, it moves the army beyond the settlement. And now you take a look at a settlement. So what did Israel do? Let's take for the sake of argument, take Bethel, take Ophrah, take Shiloh, take any of these settlements. They were built on land that was not occupied, not owned. It was government land. And Israel, by Baruch Hashem, taking over our birthright from God, that land becomes the property of the state of Israel. So you can build a settlement. So then you build a settlement. You have 10 families, 50 families, 100 families. But you have to plan for expansion. You can't just have them living one on top of the other. You're going to build in the future. Yes, we have problems with the world, with America. I'm very, Netanyahu to me is not a knight in shining armor. The fact that he allowed Obama to bully him to accepting that building moratorium to me was a tragic mistake, because once you compromise, compromise leads to compromise, and Obama expects him to bow and kiss his shoelaces. Of course, we're in a different situation today with the elections in Israel, in America, the results of the last election, but nevertheless, I hope that when Netanyahu takes over again after the coming elections, he will have a backbone. It's not so simple. If you notice, the Likud is celebrating because the hotheads like Rakefet didn't get into the upper echelon. They're coughing and choking because Miri Regev is number five. Miri Regev, I've heard her speak English. I thought she must have an Anglo parent. Miri Regev is Moroccan. She speaks many languages. She's a mother, has three children, and she also had the rank of Brigadier General in the Israeli Defense Forces. So she is really somebody. And the Tataluf. So you notice what the papers are saying. This is the big bone in Netanyahu's throat. All right? I hope there'll be more bones when it comes to compromise upon compromise that just brings death and desolation. But now, when you build a settlement, you're going to circle a tremendous amount of land around it for future development. Well, that land is barren. That land can have shrubbery. That land can have it can have trees, endless trees. It can have gardens. It can have zrayim. It can have thistles and thorns growing. Can you build an Erev around it? Isn't this too a kapath? And remember, you have a fence around the settlement. No one is going to take that fence down. It's a security fence. It's a very important fence. But can you count the fence? If you have way more than Beit Sotayim of land that is fallow, that is barren, or at least is not built upon, is this considered mukaf l'dira? All right, these are two tremendous problems. The army chaplaincy, the army personnel, let me tell you just a few words about the Rabbanut HaTzva'it. The Rabbanut HaTzva'it actually is not a chaplaincy. A chaplaincy means people of the cloth who do not bear arms. Did you have a gun as a chaplain in the American army, Rabbi Rubin? No. Okay, that's on principle, that a chaplain is a man of peace, a man of shalom, he does not bear arms. The Israeli army has a rabbinate, but the rabbinate bears arms like everyone else, because they're in war zones, they're right in front, they're right in fighting. And when I did basic training, I learned how to shoot on two different guns, the Fabrik National and then the Uzi. Today my grandchildren have guns way, way beyond what we had then, right after the Six-Day War. But the chaplaincy does not exist in Israel. It's a fighting rabbinate. Nevertheless, the rabbinate has one division, which is like a kollel. They sit and learn and paskin halacha. Rabbi Avidan, who was Rosh Yeshiva when he left the army of Shalavim, Rabbi Avidan was the head of halacha in the Israeli army. And they basically deal with all these questions that come up. As far as I know, this is the first time that a civilian rabbi, Rabbi Usher Weiss, is dealing with these difficult questions, which reflect security, the army, Yehuda V'Shomron, and all that is involved. Now, you should know that there's a basic machloket among poskim. What is a karpaf? A karpaf, it could be, it's in an isolated area where it doesn't belong to anyone. People don't live there. People don't walk there. Maybe that's the classic karpaf. But where it's in your backyard, in a chatzer, have you ever studied these halachot? It's a basic machloket. When it's in your backyard, there's no concept of a kapaf. It's part of your living experience. In Maplewood, before I went in Aliyah, people mourned me, cried for me. How can it be a man is leaving the rabbinate, leaving YU, and leaving a beautiful home in Maplewood, New Jersey? There we had a big backyard. We had a two-car garage. We had a nice driveway. I had ample room for thousands of sfarim. In my life, I've given away thousands upon thousands of sfarim. When I left America, here, I put upstairs, you know, the sfarim. I just recommended for a lady, a Talmud asked me, did the Rav really teach women Gemara? So I recommended, I thought I'd give Shirim on it, but I gave him an answer. But I explained the sugya in sota. But I told him to look at the sefer I put upstairs that was given to me a few months ago, the Lubavitcher Rebbe and his attitude towards women. And there's a chapter there on the Rebbe with the Belzer Rebbe, which I said the Rav, it's exactly the thoughts that the Rav expressed to me and to others. And I gave him sources where you can see the Rav in writing. But when it comes to a karpaf, that is part of your living, it's a chatzer, it's in your backyard, that is not a karpaf. That's part of who kaf le dira. You follow me? It's the way a human being lives. You have a backyard. You have room for your cars. You have a little garden in back. Yes, so you have Zrayim. Did you figure out how big a karpaf would be that we can understand it?
11,250 square feet.
Wait, slow down. 11,250 square feet.
For an 18-inch amma or up to 20,000 square feet?
18-inch, 20. So give us an idea. And this campus here, how big is it?
The whole campus?
Yeah. Figure out if we can have a tangible feeling. But there are wealthy people who have big, big backyards. But it's yours. It's a chatzer. In a chatzer, there's no kapaf. This is not that you happen to walk there once in a yovel and suddenly you see, wow, there's a stream, there's shrubbery, there's thistles, there's thorns. This is your backyard. You're living here. Now, you should know it's a basic machloket rishonim. The Shulchan Aruch paskins l'chumra, but it is a sniff for the Heta. Those of you that have studied with me over the last, since 1978, know how many months I have spent in developing the concept of a sniff. It's not recent, it's long ago. But what a sniff means, a sniff, how would you say that in English? I don't even know. A sniff, a subdivision, it strengthens when you have a shitat rishonim. Even if the Shulchan Aruch didn't paskin that way, you don't throw it away. Later, you can use it if you have other concepts, other snifim, and that's the way you build a heter at times. I'll give you a tangible example that you can all identify with. After World War II, there were hundreds of thousands of women who didn't know what happened to their husbands. So now a woman comes, and she comes before a Beit Din of Talmidei Chachamim, and she says she wants to marry. And the Dayanim will ask her, when did you last hear about your husband? Well, I last heard about him, he was moved into Auschwitz. Did you hear subsequently? No. Now, true, when you talk about Auschwitz, the majority of men who came into Auschwitz died there. Right or wrong? A death camp. But that's not enough. The Gemara in Yevamot, it's Eishet Ish, we're not playing games here. So midrabanan, we can't go against, we can't use a majority here. There were always miracles. There were always people who escaped. Many books have been written. But then there was a Shitat Rishayin in Rav Elazar Meir Vadun. That's the way he's referred to, although I've already been corrected by Talmidim that he didn't really live in Verdun. It was a mistake in the Ketav Yad. He's one of the last of the Balei Tosfot. And one time a ship sank off the coast of Verona, and a few years went by, and he was matir the women to remarry on the basis of Avad Zichro. If a person was on a ship that capsized in the middle of the Mediterranean, and a number of years have gone by, and the man loved his wife, they lived normally, they didn't hate each other, they weren't looking to divorce each other. It's based upon, everything I'm saying has sources, based upon a Mishnah in Yevamot. So he was matir them to remarry. Everyone yelled at him, what is this, hocus pocus? What's going on here? What do you mean? Avad Zichro, who heard of this concept? All right, it wasn't accepted, but it was put into the vault, if I may quote Seinfeld. Who should come and learn in this classroom, I'd be very happy. I taught his cousins. You got to know where he comes from. His mother made a mistake. She married an Ashkenazi. Had she married within the tribe, at given a Shemesh Abbasant. Anyway, sign, you put it in the vault. No one forgot about it. No one passed him that way. But with modern times, the Chatam Sofer and all that comes after, the Chol Hanan, today, the minute the Twin Towers fell, people said to me, oh, what will happen to the poor women? They never see their husband's remains. How could they remarry? I said, that's your problem? Within 30 days, they'll be able to give a heta. Why? Two sniffin. One sniff, the majority of people in the Twin Towers perished. Second sniff, had he survived in the modern world with telephones, with fax machines, with email, with computers, he would have contacted his wife within 30 days. After the Holocaust, they waited 2 or 3 years because the only way they could find each other was through a list of the Red Cross. It was by hand, lists of the Jewish agency. When we came in Aliyah, there was a program on the Israeli radio that went on for years. It still goes on. Mechapsim Krovim. People looking for relations, relatives. Today, in 1 minute, you send an email. I survived. I crawled out the Twin Towers. I went to get my drunk. I went to a saloon. Sorry, I didn't come home. I was dead drunk. If you didn't get an email, a telephone call, 30 days went by, and exactly, they were matter, there isn't an aguna from the Twin Towers. That's a sniff. In other words, a Avad Zichro, yes, we don't paskin. It's not enough when it, you follow me, Isaac? If it stands alone, it's not enough. But if you can use it as a sniff, so this shita that in a chatzer there's no karpaf, I don't want you to shoot me down and say, but the Shulchan Aruch doesn't paskin that way. You're absolutely right. But Rav Ashawai says it is a strong sniff lachatir. Then he quotes Rav Yaakov Emden. And Rav Yaakov Emden, you'll see all the sources. I'm not going to go give you all the sources, but you can see it from what he's quoting. Rav Yaakov Emden says very clearly, quoting a tshuva from the early Achronim, that when we talk about Kapaf, it has to be a totally deserted area. When the Gemara talks about vegetables growing, but if these vegetables are yours and you pick them and you eat them and you enjoy them, then it's not a kapaf. It's part of your house. And the whole concept of ecology comes to the fore. Everything that you have in a city is there for the toshavim, for the people, the inhabitants. even wasteland, even marshes, even water, it all has a positive feeling for you. It's part of your existence. You need it. And then Rabbi Yaakov Bendam says he was looking at his father Sefer. Who is his father? The Chacham Tzvi. Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Ashkenazi. And he finds a tshuva in the Chacham Tzvi where his father says exactly the same svara and paskins l'chakel. And paskins that you can be mekel. Wow. And then he quotes the Divrei Malkiel. Know how many of you are from Poland? The Divrei Malkiel 100 years ago was a posek mufak in London, Rabbi Malkiel Tenenbaum. If you meet a Tenenbaum, ask them if they're direct descendants of the Divrei Malkiel. He was one of the great poskim of our people 100 years ago, exactly 100 years ago. And the Divrei Malkiel says, if you're in a city and shrubbery grows by itself, thorns, thistles grow by themselves, that is not able to nullify the fact that it's mukavla dira. You encircle the whole area where you live, the house, the backyard, the city, the shkuna, the area, the neighborhood. You encircled it yourself. That is mukavla dira. Everything in it is there. You know it's there. It's part and parcel of your existence. The Divrei Malkiel says the only time you would have a problem if you went and planted on your own fields of zrayim, of vegetables that are growing, and you don't want anyone to walk there in your makpid, then you would have to encircle the vegetable field. But if it's just something that grew by itself, something that's there, that is mukav l'dira, and there is absolutely no problem with building an eruv around it. And this is the way he paskins l'halacha with an Air Force base, with Yehuda v'Shomron. You can be somach on the fence that surrounds the area. And l'ma'asen yirel d'ledaka mekelim yesh l'hakel gam b'besisim elu. And the same thing with Yehuda v'Shomron, where it's humans living there, the entire circle that is built around the community is to protect them. It's to guarantee their future. This is mukav l'dira. And he says, and as far as the question in the big cities of the botanical gardens and what they plant there, but why do they plant it? For people to enjoy it. Noi, beauty, color. Humans walk there. Humans enjoy the botanical gardens. If that's the case, we can be made well. So my dear students, that is Rabbi Asher Weiss, and that takes care of the problem of Chatam. In practically 90% of the times, the question will come up. If it's not difficult to be machmir, then you see what Rabbi Riskin did. He encircled all the areas where there's vegetation, where people shouldn't walk on it. So that is not included in the Erev. But even where you can't do that, you can still be samach on all the mekilim. And this is why the problem of kapaf basically never came up in the literature in the United States. It is almost not mentioned at all. The problem of 600,000 is a problem. Who we paskin by, major thoroughfares, highways, how can you do a tzirat hapetach over the highway? These were the problems. But kapaf, even the Bronx Zoo, think for a moment, tremendous area. Everyone went to the Bronx Zoo, and anyone within walking distance on Yontif, that was like a meeting place. No, what do you say about the zoo? It's the home of animals, but is it for human enjoyment? Or is it just that the animals should have where to live? The whole Grand Zoo is for us to enjoy, to see the animals. It was a chavaya. But at that time, whoever thought of an Erev from the Bronx, and today in that area, you're not going to build an Erev anyway, because I don't believe there's one Jew living in that surrounding area where the Bronx Zoo is. The Bronx has undergone many changes, as you know from reading Vanity of Bonfires, is it called? Vanity of Bonfires was a famous novel. I met the author when I was in the Hamptons. I met the author walking on the street. You might think it was the Kotel Hadar. There were about 70 college students surrounding with him, talking with him and learning. Wow, all right. Halavai, we should be zeicher in the Hamptons to see Gedolei Yisrael walking, surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of Talmidim. My dear students, we have arrived. What you see in front of you is a copy I made of a book that I came across in Flatbush. It is a fascinating volume. Sefer Smeichim L'Shom Ro. We are overjoyed to observe Shabbat. In this Sefer, 170 reasons why there is a mitzvah to make an Erev in every community. Now, I ask my students, tell me who this Rav is. Moshe Mandel, Mem Aleph Nun Damed Lamed. I don't know who he is. Anyone here from Flatbush? Moshe Mandel, Rav Biav Beitin de Kahal Beit Mordechai Flatbush. And what I'm holding in front of me is the 2006 edition, which is the third edition of this Bible. And we're not going to finish it today. He comes up with ideas. It's unbelievable. It shows you he must have a very innovative, seminal mind. It reminds me, Labriyot, if you're Lahavdil, because no one knows the Minchat Chinuch, but if you're familiar with the Minchat Chinuch, that was a Galiciana Seifa, and the Briska brought it into Lithuania, though. Do you know why? Because have you ever studied Minchat Chinuch? It's on the Seifa Chinuch. His mind is so innovative, so seminal. Every question, every Chakira. Do you know that the Rav in 60, it has to be, I was in the shir, the Rav said Sheyurim on the Minchat Chinuch. Fabulous. This Sefer, 170 reasons. You'll shiver and shake when you see some of the ideas he came up with. Now, we all have a minhag, as you know, of getting haskamat. It's an interesting minhag. You want to know that the Sefer is solid, valuable, you can study it, you can read it, you can have confidence in it. He has many haskamat. But on the first page, he tells a story. In 1905, he visited Israel, and he went to visit the Gedolei HaRabbanim. Now, that seems to be a new minhag that has developed, at least in certain circles, that kids come to visit from a yeshiva, from Beis Yaakov, and they take them around to visit Gedolei Yisrael. I don't know where the Gedolei Yisrael, they almost have fabulous memories, because from the way I view it, I don't see where they have a minute to learn. I know how much I have to keep learning. And all right, I don't know. They must have learned a lot in their youth. I went to college, I went to graduate school, so I guess I couldn't learn as much as they did, but they must have fabulous memories. Anyway, one of the Gedolim, he says, I went around to visit the Gedolei Yisrael here, and one of the Gedolim he went to, of course, was Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the son of the stipler of Yaakov Yisrael, is a gon adir. Rav Chaim Kanievsky was the son-in-law of Rav Yashiv. His wife died, the Rebbetzin died a year or two ago, was an unbelievable lady, an unbelievable lady. I heard her speak on television. I was blown away by her dedication and the karev. All right, the question is, if someone out of B'nai Brak speaks, can it have an impact on Mr. Jew in North Tel Aviv? But sometimes it can. Anyway, he gives Rav Kanievsky a printout of the Sefer, and he doesn't hear from him. So a number of months later, he sent him a letter, and he asked him, why don't I hear from you? Did you find something in my Sefer which was against the halacha? And Rav Kamenevsky writes back to him, and he reproduces his handwriting. Remember, this is a big problem today, because many pasquilas, many placards are put up with 101 signatures, and then the rabbanim swear they never signed. And here, you see his handwriting, it seems I looked at it, and there was nothing that I found fault with. So, it's a fascinating haskama, miklal hein, ata shomeya lav, or miklal lav, ata shomeya hein. Now, on page 24, where he's beginning and he's gearing up for why we need an Erev, here, very interesting, he takes a concept that all the people who opposed an Erev utilized, and he turns it around on its head. Now, what are we referring to? We mentioned this maybe a year ago. Lulav and Etrog. Just think for a minute. Shofar. We don't blow shofar on Shabbat. We don't take lulav and etrog on Shabbat. Why don't we do it? Shema yavirenu dalet amot b'shut harapim. Right or wrong? The shofar is going to take it to an expert to learn how to blow. The lulav and etrog, in his haste to do a mitzvah, there's a whole sugya in Psachim. If you make a mistake, imagine you have two children to do a brit milah. One, the brit milah should have been Friday. The other one is a Shabbat brit. The brit milah wasn't done on Friday. And the person is so anxious to do the mitzvah that he mouths the kid who should have been done yesterday on Shabbos. And the whole question, does he bring a chatat? Or because he's involved thinking he's doing a mitzvah, he's exempt from a chatat. It's not considered a shogeg. It's less than a shogeg. It's an interesting question. It's a whole sugya in Adafayin, in Aleph, a whole sugya in Psachim. So people are so involved. Do a mitzvah, lulav, etrog, shofar. Chazal said, chas v'chalila, to blow on Shabbos or to take a lulav and etrog. So those who oppose a Erev take that concept and say, look how hesitant Chazal were that chas v'chalila, that you may carry on Shabbos, that you may make a mistake, that you may go into the Rishut HaRabim. Chazal Asid taking a lulav and etrog. How can we go and make an Erev if it might be a Rishut HaRabim? God forbid, if we're wrong, if the Sheet of the Rambam is correct, Jews are being Mechalel Shabbos, and there's nothing that frightens Chazal more than this possibility. And if you can't take a lulav and etrog, then you can't take a shofar. Alachat kama v'kama, you can't do the Erev with such a basic machloket rishonim. That's the way the opposition to the Erev took that concept. I tell you in parentheses, just you should know, because these are fascinating topics. If you're familiar with the Mishnayot in Rosh Hashanah, the city in Rosh Hashanah, so in where there was a Beit Din in the Beit HaMikdash, you did take lulav and etrog on Shabbat. You did blow shofar on Shabbat. So What about where there's a Beit Gadol? What about Yavne? Did they blow? Didn't they blow? What about Yerushalayim today where there's a Beit Gadol? Are you allowed to blow shofar on Shabbat? No, what do you say? And a Talmud of the Chatam Sofer, Rav Akiva Schlesinger, blew shofar in his cellar on Shabbat Rosh Hashanah, said he's an Av Beitin of a Beitin HaGadol, this is Yerushalayim, and he was put into chedim. They wrote they for him. And he was a kanoi. Don't think he was a kaldat or what you call later a Mizrachiite or a dati light is the expression in Israel today. Dati. There are plenty of charedim who are charedi light. So I don't take it as an insult. I know they're light. It's true. But he blew shofar. But that's the way they take this concept. Wow, Chazal was so frightened, they were mavatel mitzvah deoraita, shevi al ta'asa. Chas v'chalila, you should put up an Erev where there's 600,000 people on the streets. He takes this concept exactly the opposite. If Chazal was so worried that millions of Jews would carry on Shabbos, and as a result, they were mavatel this mitzvot. Shema kaman hashim yavudu ka. Some 2-3 people will make a mistake. How many will make a mistake? But millions of Jews, no shofar on Shabbos. Then alachat kama v'kama, we have to put up an eruv to save Jews from carrying where they're not allowed to, and being Mechalel Shabbos.
What would happen today?
So I have to say, very innovative thinking. Takes the Gemara, v'hofeich ota al piha. But nevertheless, his thinking is good, it makes sense. We have to strive, put up an Erev, save Jews from carrying on Shabbat. Yes, Yitzchak.
What would happen to Shabbat today? Wanted to take
Etrog
and
Lula
Shabbos on
Shofar. Well, Etrog and Lula, I never heard that anyone took on Shabbat. But Shofar, the whole question whether they were mavatl it all together or only where there is a central Beit Din. Listen, this is a big problem. Today there would be riots on the streets. They would put them at the Cherem many times over. Do we have a Beit HaGadol? It doesn't make sense today, because you can't say you have a Beit HaGadol, there's no unity, everyone has their own gedolim. I don't have to tell you what's going on in Shas today. So you'll say to yourself, who is the dominant religious figure in the Sfadi world? Rabbi Mazuz, Rabbi Kohn, Rabbi Badani. We don't have a Beit HaGadol. Certainly in the Ashkenazic world, who's the dominant figure? Look what's going on between Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak. And remember, the chief rabbi is not what it once was. Rabbi Lichtenstein was asked in relation to the Homa Choiket when there were elections, what was it, a year ago. So he said that today the chief rabbi is more, we need someone who can handle public relations. It's no longer the Gadol Hador who has to pass in difficult shailas. You follow? So it won't get off the floor today. But Rabbi Schlesinger, we're talking, if my memory's correct, we're talking the 1870s. That's when he blew, and boy, was there a storm. Yes, Moshe.
I heard that there is a place in Yerushalayim that specifically leaves the shofar and shul, and you read on the sign, you left the shofar and shul, and we're blowing on Shabbos.
What? Why do you have to leave it in the shul on Shabbos? I don't understand.
Nobody's carrying it.
Here you can carry, but you mean it's muktzah? If you're blowing it, it's not muktzah. And they blow it on Shabbos? I don't believe that's true.
I don't know, this is what I heard.
No. They're talking about what happened with Rav Akiva Schlesinger, but I don't believe that's true. I never heard anyone blowing. You would hear here, there'd be storms. Mei Sharim is not a quiet place. They let you know what's on their mind. Baruch Hashem. My father once looked through Mei Sharim, and you have to understand, my father... very, you know, naive, not born and raised in the Torah world. And these kids are talking, but they didn't know my father knows Yiddish because his parents spoke Yiddish. So they say, as my father's walking through, they say, Nemakun, Nemakuk, Ahunketuch. Take a look, a dog is walking through, you know, without a beard, without payas, without black clothes. And my father, Fashteit, ganz gut what they're saying, so he shows them he's wearing tzitzit. So the kids say, Oy vey, a hund mit tzitzit. You follow me? Oy vey, a dog with tzitzit. So you can't exactly get away with anything here. But just to tell you, I mean, this is a terrible chinuch. And if you saw Yediot Achronot on Friday, I don't have to comment further, the story of the Belz of Chassid, I know the family, 8 children, he, his wife, and 8 children walk away from Kol HaTorah Kula, because they weren't happy with the Rebbe, you see, and the Rebbe's not good, so you throw all of Yiddishkeit away. It's beyond, not the first time. In the 1980s, remember when Rav Shach established the new kashrut, Sheirit Yisrael, which I try my best not to eat from, so he brings in this Moskowitz, the Gadol Hador in kashrut, and 3 years later, Moskowitz throws the whole Torah, moves with his wife to Haifa, sends the kids like this Belsa to Chiloni Chinuch. You know what Chiloni Chinuch is? Friday night, I was invited out. It's a widow of she was married to a son who got smich with me, Rabbi Idel Rudman. She was married to Rabbi Reuven Rudman. So this is on Rehov Beit HaEshel. It's a block that's, it's a street in Jerusalem that's half a block long, Beit HaEshel. So she had 10 people, and the guests from across the street were Natan and Avital Sharon, known to you as Sharansky. Okay? So, I don't have to tell you what a night it was. I mean, Avital and I go back a long way, but we haven't seen each other. You know, it was great to get together again. And Natan is Makitoivet to me, because his Rebbe, who taught him when he got out of Russia, is my Talmud, Rabbi Meir Schweiger. So, it was a very interesting evening. But Sharansky, who's getting to know the whole Jewish people and getting to know the people in Israel, so they're running this program, Nativ, to teach prospective Geirim. And he has to fund it. So he was telling, he brought some millionaires from North Tel Aviv. They're hearing these prospective Geirim being taught by Rabbanim who know how to teach, know how to speak, know how to explain. They're in tears. They put tens of thousands of dollars on the table. And they said, we resent the fact that we grew up in Israel, went to the Mamlachti schools, and know nothing about our heritage. And they would like to take a class in Nativ. You understand what we're talking about? People who are third generation North Tel Avivians would like to take a class in Nativ. It's like kids I see go through Yeshiva Elementary School, day school, high school, and then they go to YU and they wind up in the Jewish Studies program. They wind up in the Mechina, it's called today, because it's the first time they're hearing lectures that speak to them. People who know how to explain Torah Hashem to me. So this is Sharansky talking about his involvement and what he's learning. And you know, it's unbelievable. You can grow up in Russia and know nothing about Yiddishkeit, and you can grow up in Tel Aviv and speak perfect Hebrew, serve in the army, curse in Hebrew and everything that goes with it, pay taxes in Hebrew, and know nothing about Yiddishkeit. So, be it as it may, he took the concept of Kiyat Shofar, it's fabulous what he did. You stop millions of Jews from blowing shofar because of 2-3 people who may carry. Alachet v'kama kama, you have to put up an air of the enemy community to stop Jews from carrying. Well, we'll go further in a second. Yes, Rabbi.
And our rabbis really are our own enemies, because they've organized a program called the Limud.
Right.
Now, Limud, the Orthodox rabbis do not want to join. Because it's Rabbi Burmes, for example, on England. They don't want to join, but yet, the people that come are intellectuals.
Rabbi Mervis did go. You're talking about Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, didn't want to join, and you're talking about Aaron Rakefet, when he came to, when I spent a month in England, they asked me in advance, would I go? I said, look, your chief rabbi doesn't go. So first of all, I'm not going to do anything as a guest. That's my best aphorism, Yiddish. A guest doesn't spit on the table. That's number one. Number two, Limer has a big problem because I saw the program. Room 101, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam is speaking on Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. Room 102, a conservative rabbi is speaking on why we're allowed to drive to shul on Shabbat. In room 103, Abe Foxman's son is speaking, why homosexuality is magnificent. Did you see the latest press releases? Abe Foxman's son married a man and a convert to Judaism. You can blow your brains out. And Abe Foxman is supposed to be a Shomer Shabbos? I give credit to my student, Rabbi Stephen Przanski, who slaughtered the deer, the bear, a number of years ago. Let me get back here. Now, so, all right, he's made a point. He's made a point. We have to build an Erev. But who the heck is this Rabbi Mandel in Flatbush? All right. Rabbi Reuben says you have to build an Erev. Who the heck is Rabbi Reuben? Ah, so now he quotes the Chakam Sofer. No, I'm putting Rabbi Reuben into the Sefer. Now he quotes the two most famous Tshuvot that were ever written on Erev. I've quoted these Tshuvot many times. Let me quote them again. Shelot the Tshuvot Chakam Sofer, Reb Moshe Sofer, Chelik Or HaChaim, Tshuva Tzadi Tef. And that's the famous Tshuva, where if you recall, his Talmud writes to him, can he build an Erev in a big city, the public thoroughfares? And the Chatam Sofer writes back to him, from time immemorial, Jews have had a Reuven in the biggest of cities. If you question this practice, then you're overthrowing Torah and tradition. This is the famous tshuva where he talks about how you have to rent the area from the Gentiles, from the rulers, and he says, in my neighborhood, they totally cooperate and the ruling authorities gladly give the land and rent the land to the Jews for the purpose of building an Erev. And then he says, in your area, I know that the area is controlled by a bishop, and this is the way he says, Vashem yitnehu lechenu lechesed be'enei hadon hagadol hechasid ha-bishop nasichiro v'yitein rishut lahasim mechshol v'talkala u'bechazdo yarum hodo v'kisei kvodo. Look at the way he refers to the bishop. Wow, Achmir Gesagte calls him Hadon Hagadol Hechasid, Habishop, Nisich Hamo, the prince of his people. And this is a tshuva from the Chatam Sofer. So I have to tell you, anyone of Hungarian origin, if you are opposed to an Erev, you may be an apikiris. Tshuvat HaChatam Sofer. We who are Litvakin, that's a different story. We can get away with our opposition. But if you are from this, Rav Menashe Klein says, why is anyone yelling at me? I come from the school of the Chatam Sofer. But let me go further. He has a much more basic source, which says exactly the same thing in this very basic source. Yes, Moshe, you want to?
How didn't the Jews in
No, listen, look into Shimshon Ful, Hiyash, in the 19 letters, whatever you know it by, the Mikhtay Ben Uziel, it has many different names, the 19 letters, so you see, Igeret HaTzafon, it has many different names, but when you look into there, you'll see that Shimshon Ful shouts and yells, who put us into the ghetto? We never wanted to be in a ghetto. The Torah doesn't want us to be in a ghetto. We have to be part of the big world. Maluat Arts for Kivshuha. Our enemies put us into a ghetto. But you're right. When we lived in a ghetto, it was a lot easier to build an Erev. Of course, it was much smaller. But nevertheless, in the biggest cities at the time of the golden age of Spain, in modern times, in the 1800s into the 1900s, where Jews lived in every big city in Europe, every city had a
Arab. Even in Spain, the Jews were in a separate section.
I don't know if you're correct about that. They probably had Jewish quarters, but not that they were forced into it. Rather, we all want to live in the five towns. We all want to live in Teaneck. That's a different story. We all want to live in B'nai Brak,
HaKadosh.
Yeah, I understand. So, in every city we're talking an Arab where the Jews live. You don't find an Arab outside of Flatbush and Borough Park. If Jews move into Bensonhurst and Stuyvesant and Bedford Stuy again, you'll find an Arab there. I don't know, maybe Bensonhurst has an Arab. There are a lot of Russian Jews there today. I wonder if it's continuous or a separate Arab.
I think it's separate.
Okay, say that. But historically, we have seen in every community, more important, Shailut Tshuvat HaRosh, which I quoted 2 years ago. This is the Rosh, this is Rabbeinu Asher, this is from the Gedolei HaRishonim, Al Pivanu Chayim. He's one third of the Shulchan Aruch, right or wrong. Shulchan Aruch is based upon the Rosh, the Rif, and the Rambam. Klal Chafalev Siman Chet. And here some Rav writes to him and is corresponding with him. And again, it comes back to what I told you. A Nerev is a legal fiction. Does your mind accept a legal fiction? To understand the Tzurat HaPetach, you have to see it's a door, it's a fence in your mind. Some people have trouble. What are we doing? Why are we playing games? Again, I quote to you what I've said many times. No one has a problem selling their liquor for Pesach. I asked the Rav, B'didi HaViyuvda, I said, Rebbe, what is the minhag? Chametz ben, we don't sell. Fine. What about the schnapps? The Rav said, that's tarovet, that you can sell. So everyone sells their liquor. And I told you, even with chametz ben, I don't want to fool myself. I don't sell my chametz ben. But a week later, I go to Rami Levi, I go to Osherad, I'm buying noodles, I'm buying products that were sold. Chametz ben, what are you talking about? The big food industry here, they have billions of dollars of food that's chametz, they sell it, Baruch Hashem. All right. Can we tolerate this? So the Rosh tells him, you already wrote to me. And the Rosh says, I already told you, Shenahagu b'chol goliyot Yisrael lahatim uvuateyam amufulashim bein hakutim b'tzurat hapetach. Moshe, you're getting an answer to your question here. And you want to asa? I says, I want you to know you have to be chose b'tshuva. And he says to him, even stronger, that if you're not chose b'tshuva, and you don't allow them to build an Erev, I give you 2 weeks after you see this letter. And if I hear you didn't build the Erev, you didn't build the Tzurach HaPetach, ani menadeh otcha. I am putting you into Nidui. And listen to what he writes here, and you've got to be very careful, because in Israel, you know, they use this term in the Machlokes between B'nai Brak and Yerushalayim, they called a certain great Rav a Zaken Mamre. When you call someone a Zaken Mamre, that's like calling someone a Maisa. He's Chayav Mita. Some Hacheds will go and kill him. You understand? The Shas people that wanted to destroy, beat the hell out of Chaveh Knesset Yishai. So Amnon Yitzchak said, he saw the television, the video clippage. He said, those are the same people that came to beat me up. He said, these are professional murderers who are part of the Haredi syndrome. So look what he writes. This is the Rosh. This is not the Chatam Sofer. This is the Rosh. V'yim hayitu b'mei ha-Sanhedrin, hayu mei mitn otcha. Ki ata ba la'akol Talmud shesideh Rabashi, v'lachlok al kol hagadolim shehayu ad hayom hazeh. Al kam shemetu zichronam levracha, v'et asher heima chayim ad heima. L'chein chazah b'cha, v'al titosh torah Moshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom. Wow, that is unbelievably powerful. Hold on 1 second. And here I'll clue you into something I just did today, which is that this is the heart of understanding who we are, what we are, what is Torah about. Last summer I mentioned to you I lost the place I stayed in for 20 years. It was inevitable. The house was taken over, but it was very, very disheartening because we only were told a few weeks. We already bought tickets. So we wound up in a different area of Borough Park in one oversized, in one room. They were very difficult. But the shul I davened in is cousin of the Satmarov and a very wonderful individual, Rav Sinai Halbishtam, Torah Vadas graduate, studied with Rav Moshe Feinstein for many years, Talmud Chacham, and you could see a real Ohev Yisrael. So I became very friendly with the Rebbe, with the Rebbe's son, and particularly one balabas there, Akiva, Rabbi Akiva Nof, who's an Israeli. What he's doing in America, I don't know. He's there more than 20 years. His wife died there. His two children are here. One child is in Montreal, but he does have siblings in Crown Heights. So he has written quite a few svarim, and he just finished the sefer on 42 Rabbanim and Rebbeim who survived the Holocaust, but didn't just survive. They went further and built Yiddishkeit all over the world. And in order to publish this volume, he needs financial help. So he asked me to write a letter, from I'm an academician, so I could write a letter in English. I had letters from the Rebbe, others. And he's going to send it on to Chancellor Merkel of Germany and ask for the German government to sponsor the book. So I just wrote a letter. Sherry typed it for me. I have it. I want to mail it today or tomorrow morning. And in the letter, I say, and this is exactly what Moriu Rebbe wrote to me in the letter I reproduce in the first volume of the Rav, that Yiddishkeit has two Torahs. Biktav Baal Peh, and the Rabbanim are our Torah Shebaal Peh. And if Chas v'Chalila, they wouldn't have survived, there would be no Yiddishkeit. You need a living example. You need the Torah Shebaal Peh. You need the Rebbe and Talmud. You need the tangible individual who's breathing, who you can touch, who you can observe, who you can watch, who you can gain from. And this is exactly what the Rush is saying. And this is the heart of Yiddishkeit. If you're going to say, I don't like an Arab, I don't like selling chametz, I don't like legal fiction, you are rebelling against the oral tradition. And this is the heart of Yiddishkeit. You want to be machmir? That's a personal matter. I was told that Rabbi Yosef Weiss, my only Rebbe who's alive yet, should live and be well, that Rabbi Yosef Weiss used to go down to the Harlem River and he had a bottle of schnapps left over. He spilled it into the Harlem River. The fish were happy. No two ways about it. But that's a chumrah. You don't want to carry? Still a hate, perhaps. Don't carry. But don't look askance at the Arab. And he begins the volume very, very sharp. The Rush, the Chatam Sofer. I'd love to know who this rabbi is. No, do you know? You have contact with Tlapish? You have a sister living there. Am I right? All right, she would know. Fine. Let me go one step further. And here you have Edut Nemanakva. Brooklyn, everyone asks me about the Erev in Brooklyn. And he says, I'm quoting from page 34 now, I've consulted with Rabbanim who know the topic very well, and they investigated Brooklyn, the entire surrounding area, and on three sides of Brooklyn, there are fences. Water. Wherever you have water, you have to build fences. And lefikach, nira anivatati, she'en din reshut harabim b'Brooklyn, lechol haposkim. Once you have three fences, it cannot be a reshut harabim. Perhaps it's a carmelite. But three fences, Rabbanim come to him, told him, testified. Remember, Rabbi Menashe Klein even gave the names of two mere yeshiva boys. I remember one name was Shon, I think I know the family, who traversed the entire surrounding area near the water, and they too testified, three fences. But watch, Baruch HaTor Melech Olam Shekom Yemin Veral.
Is this book Hebrew or
Hebrew? Hebrew. He said, Abba, why should he write English? Hebrew.
Well, if he wants the German government to give money.
Oh, you're talking about his book? It's in Hebrew. That the German government, they can't object that it's in Hebrew. It's in Hebrew. Well, it can be translated into English, but he writes Hebrew. He makes a living in America who misagnen sfarim shel rabbanim l'mashal rabavram pam. Rabbi Pam's book, he was the stylist. You follow? That's when I cried about Masoret Moshe. Halavai, they would have given the book to Reb Gershon to style it. It would read much better. It would flow. Okay? So three Rabbanim came to him. One page later, he tells the following story. Avreich Echad. Avreich. Modern terminology. Kolel, Yungoman, a Kolel person, Avreich, from Yosef HaTzadik. Avreich meaning smart, knowledgeable, but young in years.
The so, English version is Avreich.
Avreich. Avreich is your family, so that is the English version.
Right.
And Herbie has a son-in-law, right? It's a son-in-law. Who is an Avreich, has a daughter who is an Avreich, correct. So, you have to understand some things. When you're in Kolel, you're young. You're more extreme, generally, than your Rebbeim. This is the nature of life. Someone who's out in the world and interacts with the world, he has, I would say, a more sophisticated attitude. It doesn't mean that, God forbid, he's not that he's against halacha. I can just say, when I learned with the Rav, I was a much bigger kanoi than the Rav. It took me many years to understand and comprehend the Rav properly. Youth tends to kanoi. It's good, it's healthy, but it has to be, you know, within a proper boundary. Hinei bolafanai avrach echad v'yomali. Even though it's true that there are three walls around Brooklyn, it's not around all of Brooklyn. It's only around part of Brooklyn, because the third wall is much shorter than the other walls. Ulechein, rak borough park, he betoch ha-shlosha mechitzot. Ma she'ein kein Flatbush, yesh chelik mimenu, She'eno betoch shalosh ha-mechitzat. And this young man comes along again. We got to go and check. Spend a year walking, getting off the car on the Belt Parkway, seeing what's going on there with that side. So this young man comes to him and says, Borough Park Taka, if you go to the sea, there is a wall, but Flatbush, part is and part isn't. And, you know, bear in mind, Flatbush is probably quite bigger than Borough Park. That is true. Borough Park is a limited area by 60th Street. It's no longer Borough Park. But when you talk in terms of Flatbush, Flatbush goes all the way from Midwood all the way to, what's it called, Gravesyard? What's that?
Gravesend,
whatever they call the end of Flatbush. It used to be burial ground, I'm told, for the mafia. Whenever they killed someone, they threw him into the ground there. Shit, that's what I'm told. I don't know whether it's true or not.
It's Dutch name.
What?
Dutch name. It was a town there. The Dutch town.
But why do they call it Gravesend? That's what I was told. I don't know if they were pulling my leg or not, but they told me that's where the mafia... that's where the mafia buried its victims. But he says, yes, he says, even if what this young man is telling me is true, he says, I'll accept it. But it still is not a reshut to rap near right. And he quotes the Shulchan Aruch, Hafilu habe rak shnei mechitzot vel lechi. V'kol shekein sheyesh tzat mechitza b'makom lechi. Habe reshut hayachet l'kol haposkim. In other words, if on the third side, if there are two big walls, then the third wall can be a lechi. It's like a sukkah. You don't need a major wall. It still is not harashut harapim. Ulam de maaseh shamati mimunchim sha'emet eino kedivrei avrei chazeh. Ela shinitbareh sheyesh yoter mishalosh mechitzot. He says, there are more than three. Even on the fourth side, there are somewhat of a wall. So you see, right away with Brooklyn, here you have Eidut Nemana from evidently a reliable Rav, Rav Mandel. I don't believe in Flatbush. You can open a Beis Medrash and not be a reliable Rav and not be a Talmud Chacham. And Rav Mandel says, three Rabbanim told me it is surrounded on three sides at least, with a lot more than just the lechi, and it could be on the fourth side, you have a mechitza as well. Let me go one step further. Daf Lamed Vav. Again, he asked the question, how can you carry on Shabbos if there are people who oppose the Erev? And when you make the Erev Chatzerah, you're mezaka them with the bread. But in order to be mezaka, a person has to consider it a schut and not consider it a chovah. That's a very interesting question. He has a very prolific mind. In other words, what do we say? Zochin li adam shelo b'fanav. So for the sake of argument, our young couple wins $1 million in the pious, in the lottery here. All right, you hear the radio, the what's her name, she calls, she tells you the good news, you get all excited, the people make a shechiyonu already, I've heard on the radio when they hear the news, which alpidin they can do, absolutely. I would say a tova hametiv, if you have children and you're going to share with them, it's a tova hametiv, not a shechiyonu. So, this young couple says, we like to be klein, small. If you give us $1 million, it ruins our lives. What are we going to strive for? What are we going to do? It's no good to have it when you're young. A person has to strive in life. You follow me, Zev? And he says, it's a chovah. I don't want it. Well, if that's the case, if it's a chovah, taka, you're not zeichah. We have to say to them, follow pious. Take back your money, take back your jewelry, take back your rings. I'm quoting from Guys and Dolls, but I guess you don't know that. It's my favorite American movie. You know Guys and Dolls. My favorite Israeli movie is Azulai HaShoter. And if you see those two movies, you understand Aaron Rakefet well. And by the way, the person, the chubby guy, Chubby, who sings so beautifully in Guys and Dolls, he's the son of a chazan. You should be... K. He's the son of a chazan, you should know. He didn't get that. What a movie. There's only one scene there that you can't show. Children should be taken out. But outside of that, today you can't show a movie at all. Forget it. Rafi? Schut chova. He's asking a beautiful question. You're going to make Erev Chatzerot, and all the Litvakin and Flappish say, the heck with you, we don't want an Erev, don't count us in, so what you're doing doesn't work out. There's no schut for everyone. So he gives a beautiful etza that the Beitin should make the Erev Chatzerot and be mezaka everyone. And those who don't want the Erev, a Beitin has power. Koach Beitin Hefker, Beitin Hefker. So all they have to do is declare. And if anyone doesn't want part of this Erev, doesn't want to be a shutaf, their property is declared hefka. And therefore, we don't have to worry about them. They're not part of the community. They don't own land. Halacha lemaisa, I wonder if this is done. Very fascinating. In Yerushalayim, Baruch Hashem, here they make an Erev, and I told you in the Motzad Datich, you can see the box of matzah, it's on display behind the glass, and every Erev Pesach, they replace it and make the Erev and make a bracha, and they're mezaka the whole city. No one objects. But Kakoach, Hefka, Beitin, Hefka, wow, what a fascinating solution to this problem. We'll go further. It's a very fascinating contrast. You'll see when I pick up again what he comes up with, what the Erev saves us from sins we never dreamt about. 170 reasons. We won't do them all, but I'll do the innovative ones. And then afterwards, we come back to Rav Asher Weiss, and then we roll in to Australia. And the material is overwhelming, what the Jewish mind, what the Torah Shabbat Peh, what innovative thinking we can come up with, but it should only be B'Shalom B'Shalva. Before I sum up, I just want to state, tomorrow at 9:05, I would not miss the shiur for all the golden Fort Knox, for all the sovereign British coins of gold that are in existence, of which Aaron Rekefet owns one. A student sent me a beautiful letter with a gift, a sovereign gold coin from England. It's unbelievable. I've gotten gifts, Baruch Hashem, from hockey. What do they call them? Pucks? Mm-hmm. Someone scored a goal. I taught his daughter, and he dedicated the puck to me, and he signed it. I have some interesting gifts. But I wouldn't miss the shiur tomorrow, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen lesson with a sideshow, Rabbi Avigdor Miller, his son-in-law. The next shiur is Wednesday night in, I don't even know myself, I believe it's in North Miami Beach. Thursday night is a private shiur by invitation only. They really learned how to use me. In Hollywood, Florida, Shabbos, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, endless shiurim in Hollywood, Florida, then Boca, Bal Harbor, and the next Shabbat, Deerfield Beach. So tomorrow I'm here, Yomo is here at 9 o'clock with the two recorders and his breakfast, and the next 2 weeks, but no one is to leave, wash up or davening Mariv. The next 2 weeks, I am not here. Pray that I should have strength. The Kadesh Shem Shemayim Lahadil Torah Lahadira. And 3 weeks from today, God gives strength. I hope it's after the snow. I hope the weather's a little bit warmer. We are back in class and hitting away with the help of the Ribbono Shel Olam. What did we do today? Asher Weiss. The shilas about the army camp, the Air Force camp, Yehuda V'Shomron, only he deals with it as far as I know. The co-concept of Karpaf and what it means and the acronym. And you see, they took a very benevolent attitude. And I think a key word here is ecology. I'll agree with Rabbi Yanklovich, who I don't know. But on that level, I can understand what he's saying. We then introduced our friend, who I hope I will find out exactly who he is, Rabbi Moshe Mandel, very fascinating sefer. One second, let me just give out a few things. Just see that we have a minion, please. This is for Rabbi Rubin. And Rabbi Rubin, you're interested in Jewish philosophy. Here is a bombshell about the Rav, what I discussed in class a few years ago. For those of you interested in kosher gelatin, this is very fascinating. My Talmud, Mark Wiener, bought a product in Queens, I think it was, and it lists gelatin on a product made here, and he corresponds with them what type of gelatin. You should know halacha l'maisa, the rabbinate in Israel no longer allows gelatin made from treif animals to be used here. So the gelatin used here is either fish gelatin or gelatin made from glatt kosher slaughter. It's parv, by the way. You'll see all the documents here. Very fascinating. Kol hakavod to Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener. And finally, this is Shmuley Yanklovich's article that I referred to. Please, God, help me to understand why we must pray for a third temple. And with that being said, let us stop Marv and pray for a third temple.
He's not in favor of that?